Welcome to Community News covering the towns of Marlboro, Hudson, Harvard, Stowe, and Bolton. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. This program is sponsored in part by the Lions Clubs of Ashland, Bolton, and Harvard, and thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. In the next hour, I will be bringing you news from the April 24th Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate, the April 24th Harvard Press, and the April 29th Stowe and Bolton Independent. This is Bob Brady reading to you live from the Patricia A. Fletcher Studio at Audio Journal in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm going to start us off with the Marlboro Hudson Community Advocate. It's a privilege to share our story. Hudson mother receives kidney donation from her daughter, by Leah Bosalil. While receiving dialysis at UMass Memorial Medical Center, Hudson's Mary Beth Finn, 63, said she met a lot of incredible people who she became close with during her treatment. Unfortunately, she also lost many of those new friends. She felt the absence of those who never made their way back. The losses were devastating. Currently, more than 100,000 individuals nationwide, both adults and children, are awaiting a transplant. Tragically, due to the scarcity of donor organs, an average of 16 people lose their lives each day while waiting for a transplant. It's a privilege for us to be able to share our story, said Finn's daughter and eventual kidney donor, Courtney Hickson, 32. Though Hickson has always wanted to be an organ donor, she never quite imagined being a living donor, and she certainly didn't expect her donation would go to her own mother. On a random Tuesday evening, Finn had finished up seeing her mom at a nursing home and stopped to speak to someone in the parking lot. All of a sudden, I just did not feel well, she recalls. Immediately heading home, Finn climbed into her bed and remained there leading into the weekend. Her two daughters suspected she might have come down with COVID-19 or another illness, but when she couldn't stand or make it to the family's plans that weekend, they realized something was up. This isn't normal, Hickson remembers thinking. While visiting the emergency room at Marlboro Hospital, medical staff informed the family Finn would need further testing and treatment at UMass Memorial Medical Center in Worcester. She would spend the next 4 days in intensive care after it was discovered her kidneys were failing. If the family had waited any longer, Finn would not have made it. That was a stark, terrifying reality, Hickson said, adding she was happy she and her sister had made the right judgment call. Although the family has no history of kidney disease, the diagnosis didn't come completely out of nowhere. At another medical facility a year prior, Finn was informed she had a prolapsed uterus. The doctors told her she could live with the condition, but didn't explain much about her options. So I put myself on the back burner and I continued working, Finn said. But the uterus was crushing her kidneys, and her vaginal wall also had prolapsed. The new diagnosis was shocking for Finn. I didn't want to accept it, she said, adding how she's also a breast cancer survivor. Navigating the uncertainty of the treatment plan, Hickson tagged along with her mom to some of the appointments. For the next year, Finn underwent dialysis treatments 3 times a week, eventually becoming eligible to begin the donor match process. That's when Hickson stepped in. At first, Finn decided her daughter's offer to donate, believing she was too young. But she was insisting, and I am forever grateful, Finn said. I will appreciate life every single day that I wake up. For Hickson, it was simple. I didn't think twice about it, she said. adding she doesn't regret her decision one bit, especially with how well Finn's recovery has gone. I knew I wanted to do it just because my mom is so young to have to go through this, she said, noting she didn't want her mom to be held prisoner to the dialysis schedule. She's just got so much life left in her. I didn't want her to have to navigate these challenges that dialysis presents. The folks at UMass are incredible, she said. Finn's transplant surgeon, Dr. L. Justin Balin, said it was an honor to be part of the surgical team for Finn and Hickson. Throughout the process, he enjoyed getting to know the mother and daughter. To take one look at them together is to see that unique brightness of common spirit that a mother and daughter share, a part of which was passed from one to the other by the kidney they now share as well, Balin said. Truly, in a world that is increasingly chaotic and divided, living organ donation is evidence of the greatest lengths one human being will go in order to help another. UMass Memorial's organ transplant program continues to expand across access to living donor transplantation, supported by an experienced team and strong clinical outcomes, including a 100% living kidney donor survival rate. In 2025, the program reached a key milestone, performing more than 100 kidney transplants in a single year for the first time, reflecting continued growth and expanded access to care. They've helped both my sister and I have more time with my mom, Hickson said. We are both so appreciative of that because we love our mom to death and we couldn't imagine not being with her. Now both Hickson and her mom have a renewed sense of value of life and are looking to check some items off their bucket list. On April 20th, Hickson crossed an item off running the Boston Marathon. What better way than to honor my mom in the presence and honor this journey that we've kind of been going through together, she said. Rejected. Board of Health denies BP's transfer station expansion proposal by Paul Hopkins. The Hudson Board of Health voted unanimously to stop a proposed expansion of the Cox Street transfer station. While rejecting the project, the board said the expansion would pose a danger to public health, safety, and the environment. The action followed dozens of hours of hearings at Hudson High School with testimony from BP Trucking and citizens. BP wanted to build a new structure farther off Cox Street and boost the capacity of the transfer station from 350 tons per day of solid waste and construction debris to 850 tons per day. The expanded operation would have increased truck traffic by an estimated 400 trips per day. BP has the option to appeal the board's decision. The Board of Health was scheduled to meet April 22nd to vote on the formal denial letter, which is being drafted by the board's legal counsel. Director of Public Health Lauren Antonelli said that the board voted to deny the project because it poses a threat to Hudson. BP offered hours of testimony, arguing that the expansion would not have a negative effect on health, safety, or the environment. The firm used presentations from civil engineering, traffic, and sound experts in an attempt to prove that air quality, noise, and other effects would not exceed allowable standards. Board of Health Chair Matthew Gallen made the formal motion to reject the project after saying the board, applicants, and public have had 10 meetings to walk through all this, and there are still question marks. They, BP, have not fully laid out a plan. Six citizen groups qualified as interveners, which gave them the status to testify in what amounted to a legal proceeding. They argued the increased truck trips would worsen air and noise pollution, damage town roads, and create traffic hazards. Together for Hudson, was one of the intervener groups. This was a hard-fought victory by a dedicated group of community interveners, said Beth Langlois, a spokesperson for the group. She cited extremely powerful public comments, verbal and written, and fact witnesses. She said Together for Hudson is grateful to the Board of Health and called its decision a powerful win for our town. Select Board member Stephen Sharrock, who attended several of the public sessions, called the process thorough, thoughtful, and detailed. He noted the board was unanimous in concluding the project was a threat to public health, safety, and the environment, and said, in his opinion, they were clearly justified in doing so. BP filed its application for the expansion, which is technically called a minor modification to site assignment, in late December. BP is about 4 years into a 20-year contract with Hudson to lease the Cox Street site. BP has been paying the town $2,000 per month as a host community fee, which is deposited to the town's general fund. Sharrock previously has called the payment a giveaway. As part of the partnership, BP does not charge Hudson for trash and recycling collection from the town's municipal and school buildings. That is valued at somewhere over $300,000 per year. Marlboro High School principal leaves after 1 year, by Leah Bosalil. After 1 year leading Marlboro High School, Stephen Sierpina has accepted another position closer to home, according to Superintendent Jason DeFalco. Sierpina started in Marlboro on July 1, 2025, coming to the district with more than 16 years of experience as a school administrator in both urban and suburban settings. He previously served as the principal of Groton Dunstable High School. With his departure set to take place at the end of June, the district kick-started a search for his replacement on April 2nd. Applications are now under review, with the first round of candidate interviews scheduled for May 4th to 8th. The district hopes to extend an offer to the selected finalist on May 22nd, with the possible appointment set for the May 26th school committee meeting. DeFalco said, "We are very sorry to see him go and are grateful for the work he has done this year at MHS. While we hate to see him leave, we wish him much success." And now I've got some articles from the Independent of Stowe and Bolton. A Routine Stowe ATM Warrant with a Few Sparks, by Ann Needle. Stowe's annual town meeting, ATM, on May 9th shapes up as a relatively routine affair, with the majority of the 51-article warrant destined for the consent calendar single up or down vote. But tucked among the routine items are a robust capital plan for fiscal year 2027, along with citizens' petitions that could push a relatively brief Saturday morning ATM into the lunch hour. In the annual introduction to the warrant, the Finance Committee reported a certified free cash balance of $2.1 million for fiscal year 2025, down from $3.3 million in fiscal year 2024, but still considered healthy. But as Town Administrator Denise Demkoski cautioned there, "We are beginning to see trends that may reduce our available free cash as the gap between revenues and expenditures narrows. New growth revenue is projected at $200,000, down 13.8% from fiscal year 2026. Demkoski remarked to the select board at its April 14th meeting, "We're sort of in a lull between the bloom of the last 2 years. On the plus side," she projected, "the September opening of Masters Academy International and the pending housing development at Stowe Acres could boost those numbers in the future. Overall, what the town offers continues to come at a cost. Looking at Demkoski's financial state of the town report to the select board in March, the average single-family tax bill for FY26 is $14,114. Bolton ATM Warrant Review by Kelsey Griggs. The Bolton Select Board has finalized the warrant for the May 4th annual town meeting, presenting a range of zoning updates, capital requests, and financial articles for voter consideration. The warrant is the result of several months of review by town boards and committees with a sustained focus on long-term capital planning, infrastructure requirements, and regulatory updates. And now, let's listen to a public service announcement, and then I'll be back with more news.
Worcester Regional Transit Authority, also known as the WRTA, is a regional transit system that services the city of Worcester and the surrounding 36 communities in the central Massachusetts area, with a bus fleet that includes all-electric buses, as well as many diesel-electric hybrid buses. The second-largest regional transit authority in Massachusetts, the WRTA offers reliable, comfortable, and safe transportation for traveling to work, shopping, school, medical appointments, and leisure activities. The WRTA also provides paratransit service for the elderly and disabled, as well as a variety of special services for those groups in the entire service area. For more information, visit the website at www.therta.com or call 508-791-9782.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:17 p.m. I'm going to continue with articles from the Independent of Stowe and Bolton. For the Stowe Minutemen, it is always 1776. By Anne Needle. Americans are enjoying special recognition of the country's 250th birthday this year, a reminder that came with Patriots Day on April 20th, and the local reenactments that day around the colonists' rout against the British likely prompted many to think about how they can get in on the fun. Luckily, one local group celebrates 1776 year-round every year, and invites anyone to join in as they are able. The Stowe Minutemen devote themselves to recreating the colonial era of Stowe, dressing, playing, working, and marching as local residents did during the Revolutionary War. Members attend a number of events throughout the year, often with other reenactors from New England and beyond. Most of Stowe knows today's Minutemen as the group that gathers at Stowe Shopping Plaza each Patriots Day at 4 a.m., then wakes a few neighbors by shooting a musket salute off at Lower Village Cemetery to honor those that fought. They then march 13 miles to the Concord Bridge, recreating the route the original Minutemen followed to join fellow revolutionaries in driving the British from Concord and Lexington. In an average year, this group of about 30 includes soldiers, their accompanying families helping at battle camps, a police escort, and civilian followers of today. The Minutemen was officially reactivated by then Stowe Selectman in 1965. There is a lot more to know about this group and how it has offered area residents and entire families a chance to experience history for themselves. Most importantly, it is flexible and cost-free to try out. Dues have been waived for the immediate future, and the Minutemen have colonial clothing to lend for about a year before anyone commits to buying their own, according to Minutemen Captain Ryan Hayward. The deal is even better for children up to 18, as the Minutemen can outfit them as they grow out of their sizes, Hayward said. Colonists were not fashion-forward, so no one cares if the same outfit appears at every event. Family-friendly means just that. We welcome everyone of all ages to come and experience history with us, Hayward stressed. We have always been family-friendly and try to maintain that dynamic. Hayward's latest estimate on membership is about 20 individuals and another 20 families. While many obviously venture into this group on their own, some are drawn in by other family members. And the Independent Clause by Kristen DeJean, the editor and publisher. For this town meeting edition, we gained inspiration from the Stowe Minutemen, who were up in the early hours of Patriots Day to remind us of the state's role in the American Revolution. It's not hard to imagine the early colonists heading to town meeting. In this edition, Ann Needle joined the Minutemen and explains how to take part in upcoming events. We also review the annual town meeting warrants, election information, and have a preview of the Randall Library Grand Reopening. Declaring Independence, Then and Now. Presentation and Ice Cream Social, May 29th at 7 p.m. The Stowe Historical Society will present Declaring Independence, Then and Now on Friday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at Stowe Town Hall. This is a public performance depicting how residents of communities in Massachusetts and New Hampshire debated the idea of declaring independence from Great Britain in 1776. The thought-provoking presentation explores what the Declaration of Independence meant to those who lived during the American Revolution and what it means to people today. The program is sponsored in conjunction with Freedom's Way National Heritage Area and will be followed by ice cream. Admission is free. Pre-registration is encouraged, so we know how much ice cream to buy at historystowe@gmail.com. And the Chief's Corner with Stowe's Police Chief Michael Solis. Last month, I used my Chief's Quarter to highlight the Jail Diversion Initiative. I wanted to highlight it again this month and provide an update. Due to the incredible support this program received from local chiefs and residents writing in to local elected officials, Representative Kate Hogan is now co-sponsoring the amendment with Representative Cruz to return the original funding amount to the Jail Diversion Initiative. Thank you to everyone who contacted our local officials after reading last month's Chief's Corner. I am grateful to work in a community that values this program as much as I do. Please see my original Chief's Corner below. In communities like ours, policing has evolved well beyond the traditional model of responding to crime. Today, a significant portion of our calls, nearly one in five, involve individuals experiencing mental health or behavioral health crises. These are not situations best solved with handcuffs or jail cells. They require compassion, training, and the right partnerships. That's why programs like Jail Diversion Initiative are incredibly important for the Stowe Police Department. For over 4 years, the Stowe and Harvard Police Department have used this initiative through the Advocates Co-Response Jail Diversion Program. Currently, the cost for this program is $120,000, paid entirely by a grant through the state. This program places trained clinicians alongside police officers, ensuring that when someone is in crisis, they are met not just with enforcement, but with care. It allows us to de-escalate dangerous situations, connect people to services, and avoid unnecessary arrests or emergency room visits. Here in Stowe and Harvard, we have seen measurable, real-world results from this partnership. In 2025 alone, 121 individuals were referred for crisis intervention and support. 7 individuals were diverted from arrest, with 78% diversion success rate among eligible cases. 37 individuals were diverted from unnecessary emergency room visits. These efforts resulted in an estimated $131,000 in combined cost savings to the criminal justice and health care systems. Statewide, the impact is even more significant. According to the Massachusetts Chiefs of Police Association, over 29,000 crisis interventions in a single year, more than 3,300 individuals diverted from arrest, over 6,500 emergency room visits avoided, an estimated $2.49 saved for every dollar invested. These are not just numbers. They represent our community members getting the help they need, officers resolving situations more safely, and taxpayers benefiting from more efficient use of resources. Here in our community, we have seen firsthand how impactful this partnership can be. One example is where a community member entered a restricted area of Minuteman Airport, became aggressive towards staff, and refused to leave the area. Stowe Police responded with the JDP clinician and were able to de-escalate the situation and provide mental health intervention, resulting in no hospitalization and no entrance into the criminal justice system. Officers are better equipped. Situations are resolved more safely. Families receive help instead of entering the criminal justice system. And perhaps most importantly, individuals in crisis are treated with dignity and are able to receive access and support. Beyond the Books by Barbie Wolfenden. Anybody need a Bissell upholstery cleaner? You can check one out at Randall Library. You can also get a power washer or some of the newfangled things recently acquired, such as Roku streaming sticks and VHS to digital converter. While the renovation of Randall Library has been newsworthy, we can't forget that in all of 2025, the library kept rolling along. When the Randall Library director resigned in November, librarians Jael Gorham and Sarah Hertig stepped in as co-interim directors. In doing so, they accepted the huge responsibilities of keeping the doors open on one of our town's most vital resources. Aside from managing day-to-day operations, finances, programs, the collection, and keeping all kinds of stakeholders happy, which they did with seamless expertise, the library co-directors kept delivering its essential services to the community. One task was to write the town's annual report. The information that Sarah, with Jael's input, wrote for the report bears sharing. What follows are a few details of last year's events, much here in Sarah's words. Computer usage. The library acquired new security and tracking software in 2025. Patrons used the computers 184 times, totaling 7,000 minutes. Thanks to the support of the Randall Library Friends Association, patrons also used 389 museum passes, including one to the Concord Museum. Attendance and circulation. Patrons checked out 15,600 items, 496 from the Library of Things. The most popular things in 2025 were the Wi-Fi hotspots, Roku streaming sticks, and the outdoor power washer. New library cards went out to 164 patrons. The staff answered 1,534 reference questions, and there were 22,800 visits. Databases. The Randall Library continued to provide these databases to patrons: Consumer Reports, Ancestry, Hoopla, streaming access to ebooks, music, TV, audiobooks, Mango Languages, online language learning, Canopy, films and documentaries, the Minuteman Network acquired a Boston Globe online subscription available to patrons. Programming. The library welcomed 2,900 attendees across 232 events in 2025. Youth services continued to provide educational story times and STEAM activities. The monthly Take and Make Crafts kits for adults was popular, as were the monthly meetings of the Great Decisions Discussion Group. The Color Your World reading program got 119 children and teens reading for a collective 3,400 days. Collection development. As of December 31st, 2025, the library owned 34,000 materials consisting of print books, audiobooks, DVDs, and games. More than 1,100 materials were added to the collection. Funding. Revenue sources provided the services, staff, materials, and program. Randall Library Trust, circulating library materials. Town of Stowe, salaries, funding for materials, Minuteman Network fees, miscellaneous. Hale High School Fund, online resources and databases. Second Century Fund, primary funder of the Library of Things. And the Randall Library Friends programs, museum passes, copier access, grants, and online fundraising campaigns such as Library Giving Day and Giving Tuesday. In 2025, Randall had one full-time and four part-time staff members. Now let's listen to a public service announcement, and then I'll be back with more news.
Would you like to hear news from Bolton, Harvard, Hudson, and Marlborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune into Audio Journal every Thursday at 3 p.m.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:32. I'm going to continue with the Independent of Stowe and Bolton. Randall Readies for Reopening by Melissa Rollins. Renovations to Stowe's Randall Library have been a topic of discussion for well over 15 years. The same issues that were of concern then have finally been successfully addressed thanks to the Randall Library Building Committee 2.0. Improved access for persons with disabilities and mothers with young children. Water leak remediation. Additional space for collections. Additional storage and workspaces. Adult section with area for quiet reading and working. Young adult section with areas for studying and tutoring. Separate children's area. Restoration of original historic building entrance. Town meeting votes authorized funding for the renovation project, and grants were obtained from several local organizations. Revitalize Randall, a subcommittee of the Randall Library Friends, coordinated fundraising in the town for furnishings, contributing $216,000 to the final project. At last, Stowe has a safe, modern, efficient library looking forward to fully opening to patrons on May 8th. Stowe's Council on Aging, Supporting Senior Residents, submitted by Gigi Lengiza. The Stowe Council on Aging is here for our senior residents. The COA provides support by being a resource of information on elder affairs, providing social activities, offering outreach services, and helping Stowe seniors remain in their homes as long as safely possible. Five things to know about the COA. Office hours are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., excluding holidays. Residents can schedule an appointment with our outreach staff for a one-on-one meeting. For more, monthly newsletter is mailed to every household in Stowe on the last Friday, or sometimes Saturday, of the month as an insert in the Action Unlimited. There's something for everyone, We offer a variety of movement options, many social, recreational, and creative opportunities, and off-site activities. Residents are encouraged to share their ideas. Transportation services are available Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. in Stowe, the abutting towns, and Concord, Marlborough, and Sudbury for medical appointments. For more information, visit stowe-ma.gov/292/council-on-aging. Stowe Community Chest announces 2026 grants by Kristen DeJean. The Stowe Community Chest has announced its 2026 grant recipients, awarding a total of $92,000 to organizations serving residents in the community. Grant allocation letters were mailed the week of April 21st, according to Community Chest President Gene Dolan. "This is our favorite time of year," Dolan said. "We're always grateful to see the impact of our fundraising efforts. This year is especially thrilling for us, as it is the largest amount of funds we have ever been able to distribute." Dolan credited donors for the milestone, noting that the funding will support 14 nonprofit agencies that provide a range of services to Stowe residents. "This is our most successful year yet," she said. "Because of this, nonprofit agencies who serve Stowe will be able to benefit from these efforts." And now, let's take a listen to some articles from the Harvard Press. A Guide to the 2026 Annual Town Meeting by Chris Jones. Residents and town officials will convene for this year's annual town meeting Saturday, May 2nd, at the Bromfield School's Cronin Auditorium. The meeting starts at 10 a.m., with check-in beginning at 9:15 a.m. Time enough to make coffee, swing by the transfer station, and still be on time to participate in a democratic process that started with the Puritans in the 1630s. In fact, the British tried to ban town meetings in 1774. Bad idea. Town meeting is Harvard's legislature. The select board has put forward 30 articles for voters to debate and approve, and every registered voter can have a say on articles that include $36.7 million omnibus budget, consequential additions to the town's solar overlay district, and projects recommended by the Capital Planning and Investment Committee and Community Preservation Committee. These projects range from comfort to recreation to safety, new seating in the Cronin Auditorium, reconstruction of the tennis courts behind the Bromfield School, reconstruction of the Eldridge Road culvert, and the purchase of police department drones, to name a few. To pay for everything in the budget, the select board has asked for a $135,000 Proposition 2.5 override to avoid cutting personnel and services it considers critical. Town meeting must first approve the budget, and then voters must agree to the override at town election on May 5th. If either vote fails, it's back to the drawing board. Masks are optional. Accessible school restrooms will be available nearby. Checking in. Electronic check-in will be the same as for previous town meetings, facilitated by poll pads. The pads are not connected to the internet, so voters' personal information is not at risk. The poll pad accepts either a first and last name or a driver's license barcode for scanning. No information from a scanned license will be retained by the device. Each participant will receive an electronic clicker and can collect additional materials, such as a copy of the town meeting booklet the 2025 Annual Town Report, and other handouts after registering at the check-in table. The clickers are small devices that fit in the palm of a voter's hand and provide instantaneous results with a permanent record of the decision. The clickers use radio frequency to send the voting signal to a receiver monitored by town moderator Bill Barton and by a representative of the company that provides the devices. Barton will set a designated amount of time for people to cast their votes. Once the voting period has closed, the results will display instantly on a large screen for all participants to view. Attendees will be reminded to return their clickers at the end of the meeting. How to participate? What to bring? Anyone who wants to speak at town meeting should walk up to the microphone and take a place in line. While social distancing is no longer required, residents are reminded to be mindful of their proximity to others for their own and others' comfort. Speakers should offer their names and identify their street before beginning their remarks. All comments and questions should be addressed to the moderator and be relevant to the article being discussed at the time. If moderator Bill Barton cannot directly answer any questions, he will pass them to the appropriate person. At previous town meetings, Barton has reminded residents to avoid repeating points that others have already made and to remain civil to fellow residents. Each article will be debated under a main motion to be decided by a yes or no vote, and can also be amended, deferred, or withdrawn. If an amendment is allowed, it must be submitted in writing to the moderator. Town officials, in particular the moderator and town council, are experienced in the rules of town meeting and will guide the process accordingly. Let's see. Now they talk about child care will be provided for free. Donations welcome by Girl Scouts starting at 9:45. Children who are potty trained and up to 10 years old are invited to come and play with other kids while their voting adults attend town meeting. Pack a nut-free lunch for the child, you know, a bottle of water. Let's see. And go to harvard-ma.gov and click Annual Town Meeting and Election. You will see a QR code to register. Parking is allowed in the surrounding Bromfield and at the library. Parking is not allowed in the circle in front of Bromfield. Devon's committee prepares to engage legislators, businesses, and deliberations about Devon's future, by John Osborne. With state legislators scheduled to begin appearing at its monthly meeting this summer, the Devon's committee is preparing a focused set of questions on jurisdiction, housing, and health care to put before them, and is reaching out to regional business organizations to ensure that their concerns are part of the conversation. The Devon's committee is an elected 5-member board that represents Devon's residents and advises Mass Development on the delivery of services and governance in the Devon's Regional Enterprise Zone. Committee member Aaron Farber Chen, who volunteered to develop the questions, has solicited ideas from residents and consolidated their responses around three themes the committee had identified at its previous meetings. His goal, he said, was to produce questions that were focused, constructive, and conducive to productive dialogue, ones that would draw out legislators' perspectives rather than put them on the defensive. The 9 questions, 3 in each category, cover significant ground. Farber Chen presented them at the committee's April 1st meeting. On jurisdiction and governance, the committee asked what long-term governance model legislators support for Devon's, how they are evaluating potential jurisdictional changes involving the surrounding municipalities, and what steps they have taken or plan to engage directly with Devon's residents and businesses. On housing, the questions address how legislators balance the need for increased housing supply against the capacity of the area's infrastructure, schools, transportation, utilities, and what role sustainability standards should play in future housing policy. On healthcare, the questions focus on access to emergency and hospital-based care following the closure of Neshoba Valley Medical Center, the need for expanded local urgent and primary care, and how the state is measuring progress in restoring regional access to care. State Senator Jamie Eldridge is confirmed to appear at the committee's June meeting. Chair Laura Scott said she'd also reached out to State Representative Dan Senna and State Senator John Cronin and would redouble efforts to get them on the calendar. The committee plans to settle on the questions at its May 6 meeting, after which Scott will transmit them to the legislators in advance of their appearances. Now let's take another break for a public service announcement, and I'll be back.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.
This is Bob Brady back with Audio Journal. The time is 3:46. I'm going to continue with the Harvard Press. Governor Healey's economic development bill would replace Devon's super town meeting by John Osborne. A sweeping economic development bill filed by Governor Maura Healey last week would replace the Devon's super town meeting with a single regional vote convened by Mass Development, the state agency that manages the former Army base. Under current law, substantial amendments to the Devon's reuse plan and zoning bylaws require approval by a majority vote of the town meetings of Ayer, Harvard, and Shirley, convening separately on the same date and time. Healey's bill would replace that procedure with a single meeting convened by Mass Development at one location in or near Devon's. Any voter registered in one of the three towns, including Devon's residents, would be eligible to vote at that meeting. Because Devon's is not an independent municipality, its approximately 950 residents register to vote in the town whose historical boundaries encompass their address. The bill directs the clerks of Ayer, Harvard, and Shirley to verify the registration status of attendees, with Mass Development covering those costs. The bill gives Mass Development sole authority to propose substantial amendments to the Devon's reuse plan or zoning bylaws, a term used in the bill but not defined. Before any vote, Mass Development would be required to hold at least two public hearings, with notice published in a local newspaper at least 14 days in advance, within 30 days of the last hearing. Mass Development would convene the single meeting. A quorum of 50 voters would suffice, and a simple majority of those present could approve any proposal. Attendees would have no ability to amend proposals from the floor. Only an up or down vote would be permitted. If approved, an amendment would take effect immediately. The new process would govern any substantial amendment proposed on or after January 1st, 2027. A push for housing. The proposal comes on the heels of a state-mandated study of housing possibilities at Devon's. The Devon's Housing Working Group, created by the legislature in 2024, spent 5 months examining options for adding housing in the Innovation and Technology Center zoning district, a roughly 90-acre area that includes the historic buildings at Vicksburg Square, where commercial uses are currently allowed, but housing is not. The working group approved its final report unanimously in May 2025. It recommended that the technology district be rezoned to allow residential use, cottage homes, duplexes, townhomes, and apartments with up to 400 multifamily units. The report stopped short of recommending how any zoning change should be approved, noting only that two paths existed, a super town meeting or a special act of the legislature. The Healey administration has chosen legislation, but rather than bypass the towns entirely, the Mass Wins bill restructures how the vote is conducted. The pool of eligible voters stays the same. Residents registered in Ayer, Harvard, or Shirley. What would change is the venue, the convener, and the rules. Under the bill, Mass Development, not the town's moderators, would run the meeting, set the agenda, and present proposed changes. No floor amendments would be permitted. The timing is notable. The Housing Working Group called for studies and community engagement before any vote to rezone the technology district, but none of those steps has been completed, and the school needs study has yet to begin. If the bill passes, the new process could be in place before Mass Development is ready to present a plan to the towns and Devon's community. Safety concerns drive push to replace library floors, by Julie Gowell. Voters at annual town meeting will be asked to consider Article 13.7, a recommendation from the Community Preservation Committee to spend $242,000 to replace the floors in the Harvard Public Library's Volunteers Hall and Reading Room. That part of the library was constructed in 1877, and the floors that need replacing are original to the structure. The project covers roughly 3,000 square feet of flooring and includes not only replacement of the surface boards, but also sub-floor repairs and finished carpentry. Because the building is historically significant, the work must comply with the U.S. Secretary of the Interior's Standards for the Treatment of Historic Properties. Library officials and volunteers point to a combination of age, wear, and safety concerns as the driving force behind the project. Pete Jackson, who chaired the building committee during the 2006-2007 renovation and now volunteers in a facilities role as well as the point person for the warrant article and renovation project, said the issue has been developing for years. "There are a couple of places on the floor that flex too much," said Jackson. "After many years of sanding down, the nails are starting to come through. It's a safety hazard." Jackson himself has performed many of those repairs, nailing and gluing loose boards, as well as trying to hold splintering pieces together with masking tape. Volunteers Hall, in particular, sees a great deal of traffic and is of special concern to Jackson as well as Library Director Mary Wilson. The library held 457 live in-person programs in fiscal year 2025 alone, said Wilson. 95% were held in Volunteers Hall. According to Wilson, that number does not include programs run by outside organizations such as the Warner Free Lecture Series. "We had one Warner Free lecture that was a square dance, and we had to say to them politely, it has to be a walking thing. You're not going to get any hop, skip, and jump going on here simply because we don't know the floor will stand it." Children's librarian Abby Kingsbury has similar concerns. On the third Thursday of every month, she hosts a toddler and caregiver disco party in Volunteers Hall. "We have babies, toddlers, and their grown-ups dancing on that floor for an hour," she said. I tell people children must wear their shoes during the disco party because some people try to take them off. There's some nails that stick up and splinters of wood. I don't want anybody getting hurt. When asked about the high cost of the project, Jackson said there were a number of factors that contribute to the hefty price tag. First is the scope of the work. Nearly 3,000 square feet is a lot of wood to replace, he said. While the current flooring is yellow pine, Jackson said the replacement flooring will be white oak, stained to match the current color of the floors. He worked with the National Park Commission to find an acceptable replacement for the yellow pine, since that wood varietal is not recommended for high traffic areas. Additionally, Jackson said the budget includes subcontractors needed to complete the renovation of the floors, such as an architect, engineer, and carpenters. Since the library is a municipal building, the subcontractors must be paid the fair market wage, which is an amount set by the Department of Labor for public works projects. In Massachusetts, the prevailing wage for carpenters is a minimum of $80 per hour, which is significantly higher than what an average homeowner would pay to do the same work on a residential property. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Bob Brady. Thank you for listening.
This is Bird Note. For years, nature recordist Lang Elliott came up with clever ways to hear high-pitched bird songs, despite his high-frequency hearing loss. Back in the 70s, he recorded birds on tape at high speed, then played the tape back at half speed. Slowing the songs down also lowered their pitch.
And boom! Oh my God, there's twice as many, three times as many birds in the forest singing now as I had perceived. There's this flood of birdsong going on, and I'm detecting a very small part of it.
Lang's hearing loss is from a childhood accident, but many people lose their high-frequency hearing due to aging.
So there are a lot of birders who, as they get older, they start losing grasshopper sparrow or Cape May warbler, especially the high warblers.
Lang teamed up with a programmer to develop an app called Hear Birds Again. Currently, it's only available for Apple devices, but it's able to take high-pitched bird songs and shift them down into a lower range. The app works even better with a special binaural headset so that users can tell whether a sound is coming from the right or left.
Detecting a bird without any spatial element is useful, but what's fun is hearing it as if it's out there in a 3D environment, being able to point toward it, being able to actually go find it.
Learn more on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Jonice Franklin.
Hi, my name's Owen Devlin, and this is my story. When my doctor told me I was losing my vision, I was devastated. I worried about my future. How would I attend college, find a great job, start a family, or even travel around my own neighborhood? Luckily, my doctor also told me about the Mass Commission for the Blind. They connected me and my family to a counselor who helped us to set a vision for my future, one that included assistive technology to allow me to go to school and find a meaningful job, a white cane to help me navigate, and even tips on how to use Google Maps on my mobile phone. I found out that losing my vision wasn't the end of the world.
If your loved one is blind or visually impaired, find out if they are eligible to register for services. Call 1-800-392-6450. Or visit mass.gov/MCB. That's 1-800-392-6450.
392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.